Hey everybody, this is Greg. Welcome to In Response, Episode 2. As always, I've got Logan with me.
Hey guys.
So how you doing today, Logan?
Doing good. A little tired. Been working on getting my standard stuff together for this weekend. Yeah. Game day and everything. So.
That's right, game day is this weekend coming up. There's also, if you didn't know, over at one of the local shops, there's a PPTQ on Saturday morning at noon, and it's standard.
Okay. I wasn't aware of that, but I may have to check that out.
I say there's a PPTQ here in town. So, as you guys know, we are In Response MTG. So, we're going to go straight into our crack-a-pack. We're just not even going to mess with it. We're going to go straight into our crack-a-pack. So, I got a pack of Fate Reforged here. I've already cracked it, so we don't get the nice, you know, sound of opening the pack. So our first common is Dragon Bell Monk. 3 mana, 2/2, Vigilance Prowess, Creature Human Monk. What do you think, Logan?
Well, I think we talked about this last week. My opinion's still pretty much the same. It's a morph with upside. It's fine. Like, it's not a build around card, but it's a fine mid pack.
Yeah, support card. Select.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it wouldn't sway me into white if I wasn't already in white, but it's sure. A solid role filler.
Cool. Next up, we got Fierce Invocation. 5 mana, 4 and a red. Sorcery, manifest the top card and put 2/1/1 counters on it.
This one actually worked out pretty well for me in my sealed deck at the pre-release. Being able to just generate a 4/4 for 5 isn't a bad rate in limited to begin with.
Yeah, it seems solid.
But then if you do by chance happen to get a creature, which... In my case, it was on a ponyback brigade, so I got a 4/4 and then 3/1/1 bodies when I morphed it face up. So
seems solid. I really like this. Usually I pass it in draft, but it seems pretty solid. I'm never usually in red, so.
Yeah, this is definitely a one of card if you play it.
Definitely. Next up, we got Sandstep Outcast, which everybody should know what this thing is. It's the 3-mana 2/1 human warrior that's modal. You can put a 1/1 counter on it, so you can make it a 3/2, or you get the Flying Spirit. Solid card, I think.
Yeah, this card is very good and limited. It's also a warrior, which is extremely relevant.
Yeah, warrior tribal is a huge thing in limited, so...
The fact that it's a warrior... A 2/1 by itself that can give an evasive body, or a 3/2, depending on what you need. Because if you have a chief or two in play, this guy may not need the +1 counter. So Giving you an evasive flying body to sneak damage in throughout the game.
Seems solid.
Yeah. Very solid pick. This is one of the higher commons I draft out of Fate.
Me too. Next up, we got Return to Earth, 4 mana, 3 and a green, instant, destroy target artifact, enchantment, or creature with flying. Definitely a sideboard card for me.
Yeah, that's a sideboard card. It's again, fighting with things like Windstorm and Naturalize out of cons.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's one of those cards that is very situational. I'm happy to see this get passed back to me if I'm in these colors in, like, the last 3 cards, but this isn't something I go out of the way to pick unless the pack is just utter garbage.
Yeah, if it's bone dry, this is gonna be what I'm snapping off, just to take either the green player out of artifact and flying removal, or just as value.
Yeah, that seems fine.
Yeah. Next up, we got Abzan Sky Captain. 3 and a white, 2/2, flying. When it dies, you bolster 2. Solid card. I snap pick this every time it comes to me.
This is one of those cards where I'm really excited to see the first one for my deck if I'm in white.
Yeah.
I usually don't like to take more than that for curve considerations in this format, because 2-2 for 4 is a little bit hard on the mana, but the ability that it gives you makes it worth it, at least as a 1 or 2 of for me.
Right. I usually take this pretty high. I don't know. It may just be me. Last night, I went and drafted over one of the local shops here and played blue-white aggro with, like, I think it was, like, 2 of these guys. So it was pretty solid for me. It won me a couple of games.
Yeah, I think the card's fine. It's very good at shoring up a otherwise weak board position. And again, evasive bodies are at a premium and limited, so.
Yeah. So next up we got Map the Wastes. So it's 2 and a green sorcery. Search your library for a basic land. Put that into the battlefield tapped. Shuffle your library. Bolster 1. It's basically a rampant growth with upside.
Well, kind of, because it's a 3-drop instead of a 2.
Right. So you're getting, for that extra mana, you're getting Bolster 1.
Yeah, so you're basically slapping a battle growth onto a rampant growth and calling it a day, so.
Seems okay. I'm not picking this high. It's usually a last pick. No.
Depends on how clunky my deck or my mana base is.
Sure.
Like, if I have been forced to go 4 or 5 color, or if my CMC is 3+ for my deck, then, yeah, I'll take a copy of this and deal with it, but
sure,
it's not something I'm excited about.
Me either. So, next up, one of my favorite cards in draft, seems pretty solid to me, Gurmag Angler, 6 and a black, 5/5 delve. It's a huge zombie fish. He's solid.
Yeah. The zombie fish is a solid card. I would take 2, anywhere up to potentially 3, depending on what other delve cards you have access to. Like, if it's between the second zombie fish and the first, like, mandrels, or even the second or third mandrels, I'm obviously going with the monkeys instead of the zombie fish, but, I mean, the card's definitely fine as a common and as a late-game, mid-game creature.
Yeah, definitely. Another one of our commons here, Ambush Crotic. 5 and a green for a 5/5 with trample. When it enters the battlefield, return another creature you control to its owner's hand. So it's basically, you drop this guy, you bounce something back to your hand. I really don't like this. Not only that, this is a giant insect. How is this going to sneak up on something? I don't get it.
Well, I mean, we have Pearl Lake Ancient, which is an ambush Leviathan, so.
Well, yeah, but I can understand a Leviathan because of deep water, but.
Like, I mean, this card is... ranges from situationally okay to terrible.
Yeah.
Like, if you have sweet enter the battlefield abilities to abuse, then this guy's fine.
Right.
Like, he's not great, but he's okay. You'd much rather have the Tamir Sabertooth.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But, yeah, I'm not excited to pick this, and it's very questionable whether or not this would make my deck, even if I was forced to pick it, so.
Yeah, this to me is garbage, so. Next up, we've got Right Into Being, 2 and a blue, sorcery, look at the top 2 cards of your library, manifest 1, and then put the other one on top or bottom. I like this. This is basically Scry. It's kind of a card advantage thing, so you can kind of like, okay, what am I looking at here? Put the one thing you do want on the board, and then put the other thing either on top or bottom. Seems fine to me.
Yeah, like, it's basically divination. Instead of giving you card advantage, though, it gives you board advantage and scry. It's okay.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind having it in, like, a prowess strategy. And, like, it's, again, it's fine. It's not something I'd get real excited about, though.
Yeah, I usually picked it, like, 5th or 6th in drafts, so.
Okay. I would probably pick it lower, probably around 8 or 9.
Right. But. So. Next up, we got Cunning Strike. 3, a blue and a red, instant. It deals 2 damage to target creature, target player, and then draws you a card. This, I never want to see for the simple fact of there's so much better I could be doing at 5.
Yeah. I can see a place where you might side in one of these against, like, a aggressive deck or some kind of, I mean,
it's basically just a top end card for me.
Yeah, it's not great. The cantrip is okay, but this is not something I'm going to be super excited about. But again, I don't typically, when I'm drafting this format, I'm usually not in Jeskai, because Jeskai is very much a archetype of, like, several moving parts that have to line up properly, which right. I tend to shy away from.
So. Yeah, me as well. Next up, we got Lotus Eye Mystics, one of our uncommons here. 3 and a white, 3/2 prowess. When it enters the battlefield, return target enchantment card from your graveyard to your hand. This guy seems fine as a 4-mana beater. Other than that, I don't get excited about returning enchantments to my hand, so.
Yeah. This guy is not great, in limited, in my opinion, because there's not, like, you might be returning, like, a Dragon Grip or one of the, Ascendancies, maybe, or something. But,
yeah.
A deck that he is okay in is Ural EDH, because I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but me and a group of friends decided to do an EDH league on Magic the Gathering Online, where we are taking, you buy a precon online, and then each month you have $10 on Magic Online to update that deck and make it stronger.
Sounds interesting.
So I started with Slowbad, but everybody got a little bit upset about the LD factor of Slowbad. So
yeah.
I decided to change gears, and I built Ural for 20 tickets on Magic Online with the second update.
Sweet. Yeah, he just doesn't seem that great in a limited format to me, so.
No, but, like, in a deck like Ural, the Miststalker.
Oh, yeah.
This, returning an aura and then enchanting himself with an aura, he's almost a backup Ural, because the prowess almost makes up for some of the stuff, but he's like a mini Ural.
Yeah.
So, I could see him in EDH or casual formats, but.
Not limited.
No. Or constructed or competitive. Yeah, so.
Definitely. So next up, we've got Cached Defenses. 2 and a green, bolster 3. No. I'm taking this card and I'm throwing it across the game store. Like, this card is horrible to me.
See, it really depends on your deck.
Yeah.
Because I have had some success in the past drafting black-white warriors.
Sure.
With a green splash for some Abzan stuff for additional power.
Right.
So if you're sitting on a board where you have a bunch of 2-power warriors, like, Cache Defenses can turn one of them into a bomb that needs to be addressed.
Like, that's true. I'm not a fan of the bolster decks. I usually go for more super aggressive, like, 2-color strategies in limited.
Yeah.
Blue-white aggro, you know.
Yeah, what I'm saying, though, is, like, you don't have to be a dedicated bolster strategy. Like, having this guy and maybe, like, one or two of the bolster birds in an aggressive strategy could help, because it could help you push through board stalls and such. So
yeah, I could see that. I mean, it seems okay. I'm not picking this at, like, highly at all.
Yeah, this is a situational one of, and it would be like a pack three
definitely
pick for me if my deck warrants it.
So. Yeah. So our last uncommon here before we get to the rare here is Misfire Adept, 3 and a blue, 3/3 prowess. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, target creature gains flying until the end of turn. I love this guy. I have actually played with this guy in Limited. He is pretty friggin' awesome. Especially, you know, you get in, you give something else, or give him even flying, and he just beats for days.
Yeah. I could see him being good in the format. I tend to shy away from the Jeskai type stuff, but this is something, one of my favorite archetypes in Khan's draft was the blue-green tempo deck.
Oh yeah, that was fun.
And so I could definitely see this in that type of deck, like you force away something, which prowess triggers on this guy. He's a 4/4 flyer, and you get the loot effect. Then you could awaken the bear on him or something of that nature.
Oh yeah, and then
Savage Punch. It's this guy seems fine. Like, this guy seems like he could close games on his own.
Yeah, definitely. So our rare is pretty spicy here. Something I kind of like to see in Limited. Very, very fun. Jeskai Infiltrator, 2 and a blue, 2/3. Jeskai Infiltrator can't be blocked as long as you control no other creatures. When he deals combat damage to a player, exile it and the top card of your library in a face-down pile. Shuffle that pile, then manifest those cards. This guy is sweet.
I mean, I guess. I'm not, like, super into the manifest mechanic outside of, like, cloud form and life form and stuff of that nature.
Yeah.
But, like, I could see this card doing well in certain strategies. The fact that it's a 2/3 is pretty relevant because it pairs favorably with the morph creatures on the curve at the same casting cost. And the situational unblockability is... This is also part of the reason I dislike Jeskai as an archetype is... it feels very glass cannon at times.
Yeah, that is one thing with the Jeskai. They're very glass cannon based, and they just seem kind of a little weak.
Yeah, like, this is... it's probably fine and limited.
Yeah.
It's not something I'd be excited to pick, and I would probably pass it, because it dies to most of the removal in the format.
Sure.
As well, so...
Yeah, and then our land here is Tranquil Cove, which is always, you know, for those aggressive blue-white decks or any of your blue-white decks in a limited format is always fine. Or, you know, you could be daring and play five-color morphs. So, my pick, I think, out of this pack is probably the Sandstep Outcast. That seems like a solid pick to me.
Personally, actually... this might just be me wanting to test new cards, but
sure.
I actually think my pick is Mistfire, and then I'd be trying to work my way into the blue-green tempo deck.
Yeah, that could seem like something solid. Mistfire Adept is very fun. I mean, both are great picks. I see no problems in either of those. You're kind of going... You can either go with the White Warrior strategy, you could go with the blue-green tempo, you know, anywhere. You could go anywhere with those picks.
Because something I've noticed with the inclusion of Fate is that we're seeing a lot of green staying open for some reason through the Fate Pack.
Yeah, definitely.
So if you can move yourself into green early, it might... you might be able to just put together a solid blue-green tempo deck, which is actually my favorite deck to play because nobody knows what to do with it.
Yeah, definitely.
That's actually just something I would advise everybody to do in any unknown limited format, cube or anything. Just go with blue-green tempo and watch people try to figure out how to beat you.
So you everybody, you heard it here first. Logan Prather says draft blue-green tempo in every format.
If you don't know what you're doing.
If you don't know what you're doing. So, okay, buddy. So we're going to move on from the Crack a Pack, which was pretty spicy. We're going to go into some tournament reports. Some stuff that kind of, you know, happened in the Magic world here over the past weekend. So we're looking at, there was a Team GP hosted by Channel Fireball. Funny enough, Pork Bun Oath won that. Paul Chion, LSV, and Eric Froelich won that event. And so congratulations to them. We're glad to see them finally win. Paul Chion is now back on the Pro Tour, by the way.
Yeah, it's been a little too long since we've seen him there, so.
Yeah, which he'll be in Washington, D.C. this coming up weekend for Pro Tour Fate Reforged, which is something we're going to talk about a little bit later. So, very exciting news. So the other tournament report we have here is the Legacy Open that happened in our backyard in Indianapolis, Indiana. So we have a Legacy Open here. We've got the top eight. We're going to kind of go over the decks and see what everybody thinks here. So, Logan, we're looking at the top eight here. What are you thinking right now? We've got Jim Davis with Soltide Delver in first. What are you thinking?
Honestly, looking at this top eight, it's kind of... it feels like Wizards has basically just said, pretend the last 3 months never happened.
Basically.
It's the format, and I wrote about this a little bit on my Pyroblade update article on our Tumblr. The format was very much going to start to revert back to it, how it was before Treasure Cruise was printed. Yeah, we still have Dig Through Time, but there's only a very certain audience of decks that can still make use of that. So, it makes sense, because the format's going to go back and become very grindy again, and Bug Delver is the grindiest of the Delver variants, so it makes sense to see it here.
Yeah, it's very, I actually watched the games on Twitch. It was a very grindy game. I think it was over an hour for the finals.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, Soltide Delver really grinded out the games, so.
I do love seeing Times 2 divert in his sideboard instead of Misdirection.
Oh, yeah. That's very spicy and something that I can really get behind.
Yeah.
So, second place, we got Ben Weinberg in Storm. So, we've got basically Grixis Storm in Legacy. So it's always been a staple of the format, kind of seen a downfall a little bit when Treasure Cruise came in, but now we're seeing it come back. What are you thinking?
Well, yeah, it was nowhere to be seen in the format when the Treasure Cruise decks were in the format, because the Treasure Cruise decks were actually just as fast, if not faster, which is disgusting when you think about...
Yes.
Ad Nauseam Tendrils as an archetype, but
yeah.
now that everything has reverted to its pre-cruise state, I mean, this looks like a pretty stock storm list. The two Dark Confidants on the board are pretty interesting. I'd be interested to see where those came in. And to be honest, I'm kind of surprised at the lack of inclusion of something like Xanthid Swarm.
Yeah, that was something that I was kind of surprised about myself, because usually I see that in a lot of Legacy lists. I'm not well-versed in Legacy, but I see that card come up a lot in Storm combo.
Well, yeah, because Xanthid Swarm, and typically in Game 2, because Storm does not run mainboard creatures, they side out all the removal. So then you have Xantid Swarm come in, which when it attacks, basically your opponent can't cast spells for the rest of the turn, which then in your second main phase allows you to combo out without any resistance whatsoever.
Right.
He seems to have opted for Defense Grid instead of Xantid Swarm, which is interesting, but at the same time is a lot easier to play around, in my opinion.
Yeah, Jim Davis played around it quite a bit, and actually played through it in the finals. Yeah.
Which I can understand, like, artifacts are a little more durable, unless your opponent's playing Abrupt Decay, which pretty sure Jim was.
Yeah.
And I understand the choice, but I don't necessarily agree with it.
Right.
As well as the Dark Confidants in the board, because with if you hit Ad Nauseam, Tendrils, or Past in Flames, the odds of you actually getting to the point where you need to be to go off and kill your opponent become a lot worse.
Right.
Because taking 5 damage and then trying to Ad Nauseam your way to the win is
painful, going to be extremely...
Yeah, it's going to be very hard.
Yeah. So we got third place elves, which that's always a staple in any format. Even the cruise format had elves floating around. So.
Yeah, but it was dying off thanks to the Treasure Cruise decks, because Forked Bolt is like the bane of elf's existence.
That is true. And then in fourth, we got another Storm deck. Fifth, we've got Rudy Briscoe with Shardless Soul Tie, which is kind of something we've seen float around Legacy for a while.
But Tassiger as a one of in the main deck over something such as like Tombstalker is kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, Tassiger is kind of a breakout card in both Legacy and Modern out of Fate Reforged, something that a lot of people didn't think of at first, but now they're starting to see it come to fruition and kind of, you know, poke his head out.
Yeah, this is an interesting bug list. I'm not quite sure how good it is. There seems like there's a lot of one-ofs that have been put in there as like flex slots or potential testing.
Exactly.
But I'm curious to see how this archetype shapes up as time passes.
Yeah, and Rudy Briscoe is one of those guys. He likes to play those one-ofs, and he likes to test at the opens, so we'll kind of keep an eye on him and on his results with that deck. So next up we got Mono Red Burn, which is a standard card for the standard deck for the format. Something that, you know, you kind of just see everywhere. Burn is just burn.
List is pretty stock. One thing I do dislike about it is the lack of Vexing Shusher in the sideboard.
Oh, okay.
I also... Usually with Burn, you don't want to risk running too many fetches, because there are certain situations where too many fetches will come back to bite you.
Yeah.
Where I think 12 to 13 basics and then 7 or 8 fetches for 20 total is... I feel like he's running just a couple too many fetches, because it's not likely, of course, but in a worst-case situation, he's doing half of the damage needed to kill him to himself. Then when you calculate things in, like, Eidolon and Mainboard Vortex, I mean...
Yeah, that's always a problem.
I just don't think you can afford that many fetches, in
exactly.
My opinion.
That's, I mean, I agree with you there. It's the same way with Modern Burn. I mean, they run a lot of fetches, and... They do half the damage themselves. So, yeah. Elves again in 7th, and then Infect. And funny enough, not piloted by Tom, the Boss Ross, but by Zachary Koch, which is something interesting.
Yeah, and then again we see Divert popping up in the board again. And Teferi's Response.
Yes, Teferi's Response, a spicy one. A spicy one. Something what it was, and I saw these situations on Twitch, was they'd target, like, his Ink Moth Nexus, and then he'd Teferi's Response.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Very spicy. I mean, I like it.
I mean, it also counters Wasteland.
Yep.
It's a...
Rashad and Port.
Yeah.
That's actually the reason that they printed the card. I was listening to Cedric Phillips and Patrick Sullivan talking on the Twitch stream, and they said that card was exactly printed for reaction to Rashad and Port.
Yeah, there's a long history of the next block seeing prints of cards to answer things in the previous block.
Yeah, it's always one of those things, especially in older formats. They've just kind of done that, and it's like, here you go. Here's your tool that you need to get rid of this interaction. So
I played that Rashad and Port standard format. It was gross.
Oh, man.
I was playing them, of course. I was playing a black-red archetype with Plague Spitters, Flame Tongue Kabus, Blazing Spectres, Phyrexian Scuta, and Skizik.
Oh, okay. So I don't... Because
I was didn't play back standard then. Format Dark Ritual was...
Yeah, I didn't play back then. That was before my time, but it sounds nasty.
Dark Ritual in Standard pretty much says it all.
Yeah, Dark Ritual in Standard. Okay, we're done there. We got there, boys. So moving on from the Legacy Open, which was a very interesting top eight, we're going to get into our main topic for this evening. Pro Tour Fate Reforged is this weekend. And it's Modern. So I'm really excited to see this because it's going to kind of shape the Modern format.
Yep.
And kind of show us what decks post-Cruise and post-Dig are going to kind of come to a head.
Well, we know Brazil is bringing Junk.
Mm-hmm.
Or some GBX variant.
Yeah, some rock variant.
I mean, if Willie Edel is your team captain, you're going to see at least one copy of that archetype coming out of that team.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The interesting thing is not even necessarily the fallout of losing Cruz, but Birthing Pod is no longer in the format.
Right.
Which is, honestly, in my opinion, possibly more impactful than Cruz.
Yeah.
Because Pod was one of those decks that was just a little too strong for its own good, but at the same time, it kept the rest of the format honest.
Yeah, Pod was one of those decks that I really liked seeing, because I liked playing the matchup. Usually in Modern, I've played, you know, Burn or like some kind of, like those weird off the wall decks that you really don't see a whole lot of. Those weird, like, rogue strategies. Nidmagus Elemental Combo comes to mind for me. Let's see, what else is there that I've played that are the weird decks? Blister Coil Weird Combo, stuff like that. Weird combo decks.
Yeah, I've played I played Jund until they toyed with my emotions with too many bans.
Right.
And then I switched to Blue-Red Delver. And then I hated playing Delver after Treasure Cruise.
Right.
Because I tend to play a much more disruptive game plan rather than the aggressive. I try to play the full tempo game, which Treasure Cruise didn't really play well with. So the banning has allowed me to go back to the resilient build and the disruptive build that I like, which is going to cause problems for, I think, what are going to be the new pillars of the format, because Affinity was in part kept in check by Pod and other archetypes of that nature. I think Affinity is going to take over as the premier aggro deck of the format.
Oh yeah, Affinity, like I've played Affinity. I actually played Affinity in Standard, and it was a very very fast and very aggressive deck that just would dominate. And it dominated for a little bit in Modern. Not long, but a little bit.
That's because the Pod decks could adapt to it. Because yeah. Pod allows you to toolbox your deck against whatever's winning.
Right.
The blue Affinity decks are a little more resilient, which they had to be because of Birthing Pod. But in my opinion, I think the mono red, or the red-white affinity builds that were popular back when Nathan Holliday won a Grand Prix with them, Steel Shaper's Gift instead of Thought Cast, and then just a 4 Galvanic Blasts and a couple of Shrapnel Blasts for additional reach. I played that deck a lot, and that was back with full power Jund in the format, yeah. And I was still taking lives at tournaments. So
yeah, so that was the that was pre.
That was pre
Bloodbraid Elfman.
Yeah, that was like when all of the powers combined were available, and like they still had a really hard time keeping up with the damage output. And so I think the red affinity list might be primed for a comeback. I think we're also going to see more blue-white-red control.
Okay, so an American control deck, you think?
Yeah, because that deck was huge. I mean, McLaren won the last modern Grand or Pro Tour with it. And then we're good. I honestly, my prediction, because that's the point of these types of things, right? We make a little bit out there predictions at times, is I think we're going to see Fairies, Scapeshift, and Mystical Teachings make a comeback at this Pro Tour a little bit.
Really? You think we're going to see Fairies come back, huh?
Oh, yeah. I think it really, their success is going to be completely dependent on how many people hop on board with Junk. And I'm not sure how many people are going to. I think a lot of people are going to try to explore the blue strategies without Pod in the format that were kind of being suppressed a little bit before Treasure Cruise.
Sure.
So, because I think people are more going to respond to the fact that Birthing Pod's gone, what can I get away with? Because right. We've also seen an influx of Zoo in the format again.
Yeah, which, Zoo has kind of been making a comeback a little bit, and that's something that I've personally been kind of worried about myself, because Zoo seems like one of those decks that could just take off.
Well, it's a burn deck that deals a lot of damage to itself in a sense. So the traditional burn decks will probably be able to do quite a bit in terms of keeping them in check. Fairies, I think, is a very good natural foil to the deck, because Fairies itself is very removal heavy, and Bitter Blossom provides infinite chump blockers.
That's true.
For their lower curve.
Right.
So I could be way off base, but I really do expect to see Fairies.
Sure.
We're gonna see Scapeshift, because that deck never went anywhere.
Scapeshift is amazing.
And I think Mystical Teachings might come back, because people got so used to Cruise and Dig Through Time, they might substitute Sphinx's Revelation in its place.
Sure. And another thing, I was just looking at the page for Pro Tour Fate Reforged. It's not only modern, it's also draft. So we're going to get to see some of the greats of Magic. You know, the Brian Kiblers, the John Finkels, the Ben Starks, those kind of guys. And we're going to see their draft strategies for Cons Fate.
Yeah. So who do you have winning the whole thing?
Winning the whole thing.
Who do you like?
Oh, you know, I'm really liking Brian Kibler right now. I mean, it's his return. Paul Cheon is coming back to the Pro Tour. He's coming off of a GP win, a team GP win, with one of the best Magic players in the world, Luis Scott Vargas.
Yeah.
Luis has groomed Paul Cheon from a very, very early stage with Channel Fireball and Pork Bun Oath, as well as Eric Froelich. Eric Froelich is nobody to sneeze at. The guy is an amazing player as well. He's being groomed by these guys for this Pro Tour. So I'm really gonna put 100% of my money on Paul Cheon, I think. But I think Kibler's gonna make a run for the money too.
Okay. I'm a big fan. Like, part of me that's been playing Magic forever wants to see like Jensen or Finkel or Buddha make a deep run. But at the same time, my money is either on Owen Turtenwald or the inventor of Jeskai tokens in Modern. What was his name? That's horrible. He's one of my favorite.
You talking about the Jeskai Ascendancy deck or the token deck?
Tokens.
Okay, because I know Ochoa Oh, Yuya Watanabe. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Just had a. Someone must have cast memory lapse on me, and I had to cantrip them thought back.
Yeah, you know.
But it's Turtenwald or Watanabe. I could see taking the whole thing down.
Sure.
Because again, Turtenwald's been playing some of the best Magic of his life for almost a solid year at this point.
Yeah, he's been doing really well. And Huey Jensen, and with him and with Huey Jensen and Reed Duke at his sides, he's been doing very well.
Someone else who's back on the Pro Tour this year is the boss, Ross.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's going to be in DC as well. And
Little Birdie told me he's been testing with Pantheon.
Yeah, there's been some talk around Twitter on that. That he's been testing with the Pantheon guys. Funny thing, though, and as we're both, you know, Tom Ross aficionados here, we both like to play the Tom Ross specialties. I think he's going to make a deep run. I really want to see him do well.
Yeah. The scary thought for me is you've got Rietzel and Ross working on some kind of aggro strategy for this Pro Tour.
Yeah, that's scary.
Tom Ross, let's go back to 2009 for a second.
Sure.
There was this little deck that LSV played at a Pro Tour called Boss Naya.
Yep, I remember this.
He went 16-0 in the Swiss rounds of the Pro Tour. This, and the reason it's called Boss Naya is it was a boss brew.
It was.
He took Tom Ross's deck and went undefeated in the Swiss rounds. Never done before or after. And that's the kind of thing that Tom Ross can bring to a testing team. And I'm very excited to see what they manage to pull off with him in the group.
Yeah, I mean, and not only that, I mean, you have to look at the pilot for that deck as well. I mean, LSV is nobody to sneeze at. I mean, the guy is an amazing player. And I'm going to, you know, I'm fangirling a little bit over him, but he's a really good player. He's really solid. Not only that, he's a really genuine guy. He's really, you know, you walk up to him, you shake his hand, you talk to him for a bit, and he's willing to sit down and just kind of share his theories.
Yeah, and I've never had an issue with him. He's just never really stuck out as a personal favorite of mine.
Right.
But, I mean, again, I do agree he's a very good player. He's one of the few people in that five Pro Tour and up club in terms of top eights.
Sure. So, all in all, a solid lineup from what I'm seeing around the Pro Tour coming up this weekend. Very, very exciting. I don't know. I'll be watching. I don't know if you'll be watching.
I will most likely be watching if I'm not playing somewhere.
Right.
I tend to, I know I'm bad, but I typically skip the limited portions of the Pro Tour.
Right.
Because I personally, I don't get real excited about limited, and a lot of the drafting tables get a bit inbred especially at the Pro Tour. So
yeah, the drafting tables can't kind of, you know, skewed at the Pro Tour. You can't always do what the pros are doing. You know, not everybody knows signaling and all that stuff. So something that is going to be exciting, though, at the Pro Tour is I'm going to be doing a fantasy league type thing, kind of, you know, running out a top eight bracket and seeing how close I get and see what kind of numbers I'm looking at.
That sounds cool.
So it's very exciting. I'm really excited for the Pro Tour, and hopefully one of our picks makes it. At least, hopefully, just they make it to top eight. I'll be fine with that. Yeah. So, well, if there's nothing else we want to talk about, I think we should wrap this bad boy up. What do you think?
I think we've covered quite a bit of ground.
Yeah, seems like a solid episode. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode. If you did, check us out on Twitter, Tumblr, YouTube, and Facebook. You can search us at IRMTG Podcast on all of those. You can follow me and Logan on Twitter. I'm at Gent Greg.
And I'm at Logan Prather.
Okay. Guys, we'll be getting some more articles up for you soon. Go check out our articles that's come up over the past couple of weeks. Logan did one on Legacy. I did one on some draft strategy stuff and the additions to a couple of the archetypes in Limited. So until next time, guys, we'll see you later.
Yep. Later.